Hi, this is Pastor Matt, and I want to welcome you to our Blue Oaks Church podcast. At the end of this episode, feel free to download our Blue Oaks Church app, where you'll be able to access resources, events, and ways to get connected at Blue Oaks and in the community. The app is the easiest way to share this content with a friend, and it's the easiest way to keep up with everything going on around Blue Oaks. Most importantly, though, I just hope that you enjoy this episode and it inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. If we haven't met, I'm Matt. I'm the teaching pastor here at Blue Oaks. And today we'll be in Romans 12, verses 9 to 21, as we continue our series. If you want to follow along, you can turn your Bible or open the Blue Oaks app, or you can follow along with the verses on the screen. For the last few weeks, we've been seeing how the gospel doesn't just change what we believe, it changes the kind of people we become. It shapes how we think. It shapes how we see others. It shapes how we see ourselves. And now Paul turns to one of the most central, complicated, overused, misunderstood words in the human vocabulary: love. Love is one of those words we think we understand. We use it all the time. We say, I love this show. I love that place. I love these people. I love good parking. And those are not all the same thing. Although in the Bay Area, good parking is surprisingly close. It's one thing to love in theory. It's another thing to love when you are tired or disappointed or overlooked or misunderstood, or when the person you are trying to love is not making it easy. And today is one of those days where we're already thinking about love because of Mother's Day. For many of us, that brings to mind images of care and sacrifice and consistency, the kind of love that shows up when no one else sees it, the kind of love that keeps going when it's tired, the kind of love that doesn't keep score. And for others, this day is more complicated. It may carry loss, it may carry distance or longing or relationships that haven't been what we hoped they would be. It may bring to mind love that was inconsistent or absent or painful. And both of those can exist in the same room, which is part of why this passage matters so much, because Paul is not giving us a sentimental picture of love. He's not describing love as a vague feeling or an idealized family moment where everyone is smiling and no one has said anything awkward at brunch yet. He's describing love in the complexity of real life. Love when it's sincere, love when it's costly, love when it has to keep showing up, love when it has to bless instead of curse, love when it has to resist the instinct to repay hurt for hurt. So Paul doesn't give us one neat definition of love. He gives us a series of pictures. He shows us what love looks like when it moves through just the ordinary pressures of real life. And he begins with the foundation under all of it, Romans 12, 9. Love must be sincere. In the first century world, the dominant cultural framework for relationships, especially in Roman society, was built around honor and status. Relationships were often shaped by what you could gain, or how you were connected to other people, or how your standing might improve. So love in that world was often strategic. It was tied to advantage. And so when Paul says love must be sincere, he's not just talking about being nice. He's actually moving to something that's a whole lot deeper. The word he uses carries the idea of something that's without pretense. It's not staged. It's not selective. It's not dependent on what you get back, which means Paul is redefining love in a way that would have felt in that culture like it was disruptive. He's saying real love is not something you perform. It's something that is true all the way through. And this is one of those moments where it's easy to nod and say, you know, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, until you start to think about what that actually looks like in your life. Because most of us have categories for love that are much more manageable, Like, we know how to love when it's appreciated. We know how to love when it's reciprocated. We know how to love when it's easy. And Paul is describing something that goes so much deeper. So in the original language, sincerity literally means without hypocrisy, without putting something on that isn't actually there. Which means Paul is not just concerned with whether love is present, he's concerned with whether love is real. Because it's possible to do things that look like love without actually loving. You ever catch yourself in a conversation when you're listening, but you're mentally preparing how you're going to end it? Like, you're already halfway out, but it's like your body hasn't left yet. You're nodding, you're saying the right things, but internally, you're somewhere else. It's like you're 60% present, which is like enough to maintain the relationship. I had a moment like that not long ago. I was talking with someone after service, and you know, they were sharing something that was actually pretty important to them. And I was doing all the right things. I was nodding, I was making eye contact, I was even saying things like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But somewhere in the middle of the conversation, I realized, like, I am not actually here. Like, physically, I'm standing here, but like mentally, I'm already on to the next conversation, or I'm thinking about something that I have to do, or I'm half processing something else entirely. And in the moment, it hit me, I'm doing something that looks like love, but I'm not actually loving this person. I'm present enough to be polite, but I'm not present in caring for this person, which is a terrible realization, especially while that person is still talking. And this is the kind of thing Paul is getting at when he says love must be sincere. Because in the first century Roman world, relationships were often shaped by honor and reciprocity. Like, you gave in order to receive, you helped in order to build standing, you associated with people in order to increase your influence. And so love wasn't always relational, it was often strategic. And if we're honest, it hasn't completely changed. There was an event that happened last Monday night called the Met Gala. If you saw it, it basically is a room full of people presenting a version of themselves. Everything is intentional, what they wear, how they walk in, how they get photographed. And it's not just about being there, it's about being seen. And to be clear, there's nothing wrong with this event. It's an event. This is what it's for. But what's interesting is how easy it is for that mindset to make its way into our relationships. We're not just showing up. We're presenting. We're managing how we come across. We're saying the right things. We're keeping everything at the right level. And Paul says, love must be sincere. In other words, this is not about managing impressions. This is not about maintaining appearances. This is not about doing what looks right from the outside. This is about something that is true all the way through. And that creates a different kind of tension for us, because most of us don't think of ourselves as being insincere. Like, we don't wake up thinking, I'm going to be fake today. But we know how to be polite without being present. We know how to be kind without being invested. We know how to show up outwardly while holding back inwardly. We know how to do just enough to maintain the relationship without actually moving toward the person. And Paul is saying, that's not the kind of love I'm describing. This is love that is integrated. What's true on the outside is true on the inside. And that's where this connects back to everything that we've already seen in chapter 12, because this kind of love is not something you manufacture. It's not something that you produce by trying harder. It flows out of being shaped by the mercy of God. Because when your identity is not something that you're trying to protect, well, you don't have to manage how you're being perceived. And when you're not trying to extract something from every interaction, you're free to actually move toward people. And that's where love begins to become sincere. Not because you're trying to appear loving, but because something underneath is changing. And this is important, because everything else Paul is about to say depends on this. If love is not sincere, then everything else becomes a version of performance or obligation or image. But if love is sincere, then what follows is not a list that you're trying to achieve. It's a life that is actually being shaped. And then Paul immediately adds something that might feel like a shift, but it's actually showing us where this kind of love is anchored. He says, hate what is evil, cling to what is good. And so Paul starts with love and then immediately introduces language that sounds strong, almost harsh. Hate what is evil. But what he's actually doing is showing us something important. Real love is not passive. Because if love is sincere, if it's not just a performance, then it will have a shape. It will move in a direction. It will be anchored to something. In the first century world, especially in Roman culture, morality was often flexible. It was shaped by power and status and social norms. What was considered good or acceptable could shift depending on who you were or what position you held or what benefited you. And so Paul is grounding love in something deeper. He's saying love is not just about how you feel toward people, it's about what you're actually committed to. The word hate doesn't mean emotional hostility toward people. It means deep resistance, a settled opposition to anything that will distort what is good, which means if love is real, it will not tolerate what harms, not because it's harsh, but because it cares. And we see this in everyday life. If someone you care about is headed in a direction that's going to hurt them, real love doesn't say, well, we support any direction you choose. Real love will lean in. Real love will speak honestly. It resists what's destructive because love is not indifferent. And then Paul pairs that with cling to what is good. And that word cling is a very strong word. It literally means to hold fast, to stay attached, to refuse to let go. This is not casual goodness. This is not, yeah, I generally prefer good things. This is, I am holding on to what is good no matter what the cost. So when you put both of these together, Paul is saying real love is not just warm, it's anchored. It resists what's destructive. It holds on to what brings life. In our culture, love is often defined as acceptance without tension, or support without resistance, or affirmation without discernment. And Paul is describing something entirely different. He's saying love moves toward what's good, even when it's hard, even when it's difficult. If you've ever had someone like this in your life who actually loved you well, you've experienced this. Not just someone who is always nice, but someone who is honest. Someone who is willing to say the hard things, not to win, but because they actually care about you. And at the time, you might not have liked it, but later you realize that was love, because there's a difference between someone who supports everything you do and someone actually who wants the best for you. And again, this is not something that you decide to do. This is the kind of love that flows out of a life that is being shaped by the mercy of God. Because when your identity is secure, like, you don't need relationships to stay comfortable at all cost. You're free to care deeply and to speak honestly and to stay connected. And then Paul continues, and he brings it even closer to home. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Paul moves from defining love to showing how it actually takes shape between people. And that word devoted is not casual. It actually comes from family language. It's the kind of affection that you would expect between close family members, a kind of love that is steady and relationally committed and not easily withdrawn. Which means Paul is not describing, like, be friendly when it's convenient. He's describing something closer to stay connected, even when it's easier not to. And this would have been striking in the first century world because relationships were often shaped by advantage or by shared status or mutual benefit. You stayed close to people who were useful. You stayed close to people who were similar to you or beneficial to you. But Paul is saying in this community, in the church, devotion is not based on advantage. It's based on something deeper. Now, I think it's important to mention, when Paul uses language like this, be devoted to one another in love, he's describing something beautiful, but something that for many of us has not always been easy. Because relationships are complex, and sometimes they don't unfold the way that we hope they would. And that doesn't make these words less true. But it does remind us, this kind of love is not automatic. So be devoted to one another. This is love that stays. Not perfectly, not without tension, but with a posture that says, I am not quick to disconnect. Which in the culture where you can unsubscribe from almost anything is actually a very different way to love. Paul adds another layer. He says, honor one another above yourselves. And in the Roman world, honor was everything. It was limited and it was competitive. If someone else was honored, that meant less honor for you. And so people were constantly asking, where do I stand? Who notices me? Who's ahead? And Paul flips the entire system. He says, honor one another above yourselves, which means instead of trying to move yourself up, you're focused on moving other people up. This is not thinking less of yourself or like disappearing or pretending that you don't matter. This is using your position or your attention or your influence to recognize the value of someone else. We don't always talk about honor this way, but we still feel it. Like we feel it when someone recognizes us. We feel it when someone values what we've done, when someone sees us clearly. And we also feel it when we're overlooked. You've probably had a moment like that where someone else is being recognized for something and you're clapping and you're thinking, like, I've done the same thing without being recognized. It's like you're celebrating them and you're updating your resume in your head at the same time, which is why pastors should never be allowed to ask each other about attendance numbers. Now, if we're honest, most of us are paying more attention to whether we're being honored than whether we're honoring others. We don't usually walk into a room thinking like, who can I lift up today? It's more like, how am I coming across? And so when you put both of these phrases together, Paul's describing a community where people are committed to one another and actively elevating one another, not competing, not comparing, not positioning. This is what love looks like when it's no longer centered on you. You've probably experienced this at some point. Someone made you feel seen, like not because they had to, but because they actually chose to. Someone noticed something in you and named it. And in doing that, they strengthened you. That's honor. And Paul doesn't stop there because once love becomes sincere, once it's anchored, once it begins to show up in devotion and honor, it continues to shape how you live over time. Because it's one thing to start well, it's another thing to just keep showing up. And that's where he takes us next. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. The word zeal carries the idea of engaged or intentional effort. Because what erodes love over time is not like dramatic failure. It's gradual disengagement. It's a slow drift. It's like you don't wake up one day and decide, I'm done caring. It's a lot more subtle than that. You stop initiating, you stop paying attention, you start going through the motions. Most of us don't burn out all at once. We just kind of gradually settle into good enough, which is also how most gym memberships end. And Paul says, don't let that happen. The phrase, keep your spiritual fervor, literally means stay spiritually awake. Stay alive inside. Because this kind of love that Paul is describing, it can't be sustained by personality alone. And this is where he connects it, serving the Lord. Because now love is not just about the other person or about the relationship. It's connected to God, which means that the way you show up for people is actually part of how you're responding to God. And that changes the motivation, because now you're not only asking, are they responding the way that I want? You're also asking, am I being the kind of person who is faithful and showing up? And that doesn't make it easier, but it makes it stable. Because now your love is not entirely dependent on how someone else behaves or how appreciated you feel or what the moment is like. It's anchored somewhere deeper. Paul goes on to say, be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. And this is kind of the fuel of this kind of love. He doesn't say, be joyful in your circumstances. He says, be joyful in hope. Which means your joy is rooted in something ahead of you. It's not rooted in something that is happening to you today. Because if your joy is tied only to what's happening to right now, it's going to rise and fall constantly. But hope anchors it. Patient in affliction. Because love doesn't just operate in ideal conditions. It shows up in pressure or disappointment or misunderstanding or difficulty. That word patient, it doesn't mean passive. It means to remain steady under weight, not rushing to escape, not reactive impulsively, to stay grounded. And then he says, faithful in prayer. And this is what ties it all together, because prayer is not just something you do when things fall apart. It's how you stay connected to the source of your life. It's how you stay, keep your perspective. It's how your heart is softened. It's how you your strength is being renewed. And without it, love will become strained or reactive or exhausted. You know, the kind of love that Paul is describing here, it will eventually wear out if you are trying to sustain it on your own. And then he brings it all the way down to everyday life. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. This is a generosity that's responsive. It's not abstract. It's not theoretical. It's paying attention to what is actually happening around you and stepping toward it. It's not just what you have. It's about how you see what you have. Practicing hospitality is one of probably the most overlooked part of this whole passage, because hospitality in this context literally means to make space for other people. Not just in your home, not just in your church, but actually in your life. In the first century, this mattered so much. There were no hotels the way that we think of hotels. Like, travel was risky. Community depended on people opening up their homes. And so hospitality wasn't just about entertaining people. Hospitality was about including people. And so when you step back and you look at these verses, 11 through 13, Paul is showing us this kind of love that is sustained through zeal and grounded in hope and patience and prayer and expressed in generosity and hospitality. This is what love looks like when it doesn't just start strong, but it just keeps showing up. And now he moves into what might be the most difficult expression of loving the entire passage. Bless those who persecute you. Blessed, do not curse. This is where love moves out of the realm of preference or personality or even general kindness and into actual real life conflict. Because now Paul is no longer talking about people who are easy to love or people who appreciate you or people who respond while he's talking about people who oppose you, people who misunderstand you, people who actively work against you. And he says, bless them. Not ignore them, not tolerate them, not distance yourself internally while staying polite externally. Bless them. That word means to speak well of. Speak well of them, to desire good for them, to move toward their well-being. And he repeats it, bless and do not curse, because he knows what our instinct is. Our instinct is not usually like revenge in a dramatic sense, but it's to replay the moment, to justify our position, to diminish the other person. Like, most of us don't think of ourselves as people who curse others. We just have this internal narrative about them. You ever notice how quickly your mind can build a case? Like something happens and within about 30 seconds, like you've replayed the conversation, you improved your response, you've assigned motives to the other person. You ever do that? It's like, I don't know why they did that, but I have a theory and it's not good. And Paul is saying, don't do it. Don't go there. Because loving someone who is kind to you doesn't reveal much about you. But loving someone who is difficult, it actually reveals what is happening inside of you. Paul goes on, rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. He shifts again, but it's still connected. Because this is about entering into another person's life. Not just behaviorally, but emotionally. Like rejoice with those who rejoice. It sounds simple until someone actually experiences what you want. This is where comparison shows up again. Because it's possible to say, wow, that's great for you, while something inside of you is like, I wish that was happening to me. You could be celebrating someone and processing your own disappointment at the exact same time. Mourn with those who mourn. This is the other side. Because sometimes people don't need answers or explanations or solutions. They just need someone to be present, which is actually a lot harder than it sounds. Because most of us want to fix things. Most of us want to explain or to move past the discomfort. And Paul says, stay there. Love doesn't rush people through what they're feeling. And now Paul brings it to posture. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. So live in harmony doesn't mean like everyone agrees and everything is easy. It means you're moving toward peace, even when there is tension. Do not be proud. In the Roman world, pride was not something you avoided. It was actually something you cultivated. Like you demonstrated your worth by who you were connected to, by who you distanced yourself from, by how you positioned yourself socially. And so when Paul says, be willing to associate with people of low position, like he's not just talking about kindness. He's like dismantling an entire status system. Because in that culture, who you spent time with said something about who you were. And Paul says, don't build your identity that way. We don't always use the same language today, but the instinct is still there. Like we're still asking, who do I align myself with? Who elevates me? Where do I belong? We just don't call it status anymore. We call it networking. And the last thing Paul says there is, do not be conceited, which brings it full circle back to verse 3, because once again, love and humility are connected. And so when you step back and you look at this section, Paul is showing us love blesses when it's opposed. It enters into people's lives emotionally and it refuses to build identity on status. This is what love looks like when it's under pressure. And then Paul takes it even further. Because it's one thing to love under tension. It's another thing entirely to love when you have been wronged. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Like, this is where Paul takes everything he said and like pushes it out to the edge. Because up to this point, you could still, you know, imagine yourself doing this. Be sincere, be devoted, honoring one another, staying engaged. Like that's hard, but it's within reach. But then do not repay anyone evil for evil. This is like a different category altogether. Because this is not about inconvenience. This is about, it's not about personality differences. This is about what do you do when someone actually hurts you? And Paul's answer is direct. Don't let your response be shaped by what was done to you. Because if it is, something else is taking over. And this is where what Paul is describing stops being theoretical, because every one of us has some version of this happening in our lives. Like maybe not at the same level, but we all know what it's like. We all know what it feels like to be wronged. And then there are moments that go far beyond that, moments where what's been taken can't be given back. There's a woman named Mary Johnson She was a single mom. She was raising her son. She got a phone call at work. Someone told her that she heard her son might be at a morgue. And she didn't even know what that meant at first. And so she called her sister, who called the police. And then her sister called back. She said, "They're coming to see you. I think it's true." Her son had been shot and killed. He was 20 years old. Three days later, they arrested the person who did it. He was 16 years old. Mary said, that's when the hate set in. She said, here I was, a Christian woman full of hatred. In court, she looked at him and she said she didn't even see a person. She saw an animal. And for years, she carried that, just the anger and the bitterness and the grief. She said it drove people away from her. She said it shaped who she became. It shaped her life. Until one day, something shifted. She read a poem about two mothers, one whose child had been the murderer and one whose child had been murdered. And for the first time, she saw something that she had never seen before. They were both in pain. And she realized she couldn't move forward unless she actually forgave him. And so she made a decision. She asked if she could meet him. So she went to the prison. She sat across from this young man who had taken her son's life. And she said to him, "I don't know you. You don't know me, but we need to get to know each other." And they talked for 2 hours. And he admitted what he had done. And she said for the first time, she saw how sorry he was. And in that moment, she said she truly forgave him. He asked if he could hug her. She said yes. She said when she left the room, she thought, "I just hugged the man who killed my son." And then she said something inside her lifted. It was like the hatred was gone. And years later, when he was released, she helped welcome him home. And over time, they actually lived as neighbors in the same community. And when you hear a story like this, it's almost like hard to process because this kind of love is not normal. But that's the kind of love Paul is describing. Bless those who persecute you. This is what it looks like. Do not repay evil for evil. This is what it looks like. Do not take revenge. This is what it looks like. Overcome evil with good. This is what it looks like. When we step back, when we look at everything that Paul has said, this is what real love looks like. It's sincere. It's anchored. It's devoted. It shows up. It stays. And when it's tested, it doesn't return hurt for hurt. And if we're honest, that kind of love is way beyond us. We don't drift into this kind of love. We don't manufacture this kind of love. This kind of love has to come from somewhere other than you and me, which is why Paul never separates this from the love that we experience by God, the mercy of God. This is where the kind of love that you and I experience from God. It's a love that didn't repay evil for evil. It's a love that moved toward us. It's a love that absorbed what was done and responded with grace, a love that didn't keep score. And when that kind of love becomes more than just an idea, you start to actually experience it, and that settles into your life. It begins to change how you respond in moments that matter. Most of us will never face what Mary did. But all of us will face moments where we have to decide, will I let what has been done to me shape who I become? Or will I respond with a different kind of love? All right, pray with me as the worship team comes to lead us in a closing song. God, when we hear a passage like this, we feel the beauty of it, but we also feel the weight of it because it's just not natural for us to love this way. Left to ourselves, we want to protect, we want to keep score, we want to pull back when it gets difficult. And yet, this is the kind of love that was shown to us, a love that moved toward us, a love that didn't turn away, that didn't repay the evil for evil or what was deserved, but actually met us with mercy. And so, God, I just pray that you would help us today to live with this kind of love toward other people. Would you reshape in us how we see people, how we respond, how we stay present, even when it's difficult? God, for relationships that feel uneasy, would you just help us to love? For relationships that are easy, God, would you help us to not take those for granted? For relationships that are maybe complicated, would you give us the wisdom or the patience or the courage that we just, whatever it is that we need to just keep showing up, God? And then for the places that we've been hurt, the places that maybe it's just been really easy to kind of close off in our life, would you meet us there, God? Remind us that we're not being asked to create this kind of love on our own, but we're actually receiving it, and that's what's changing us. Help us to be fully receiving the mercy of God in our lives so that actually affects the way we love others. And we ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Hey, once again, thanks for listening. We hope you found something in this week's message to take away and apply to your life this week. If you live in the Bay Area, we would love to have you join us for one of our weekend services. For directions or information about what we have for you or your family, your students, you can go to blueoaks.church or download the app today. And we hope to see you on Sunday soon.